show up soon. In the meanwhile, we'd like to ask that Senator Tony Corcoran come forward. I need to open a public hearing on the Employment Appeals Board. Senator Corcoran.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, tall ones alike.
Don't worry, we've just been waiting to get you in this position.
I know. That's why I took the first jab, Senator.
Would you like to tell us a little about yourself and why you want to do this?
My name is Tony. No. My name is Tony Corcoran, Senate District 4 for now. I was very encouraged when the governor talked to me about this position, governor's staff. And I'm also very encouraged. I've met with the other members of the board, especially Mary Feldbrugge. I had a long meeting with her about the person whose place I'm taking, Nita Brueggemann, about the position. And just for the record, I mean, Ms. Brueggemann was the labor representative on this board. Ms. Feldbrugge, who's the chair, is the business representative. And then the public member is Jeff Brown. And in long discussions with Ms. Brueggemann, the labor representative, she spoke very highly of the work that Mary Feldbrugge had done over the past 10 years in basically bringing a board that had some difficulties in terms of their decisions with the Oregon Court of Appeals, and there had been a lot of questions raised about how good a job they had been doing at the position that they were supposed to have in terms of overseeing decisions made by administrative law judges in the Employment Division and ruling on those decisions. And so I think that she did an excellent job, and I think I'm very lucky to be going on a board that basically has been striving for consistency in my view, sort of depoliticizing the role of that board. And so I look very much forward to working with those folks. They have, I think, four or five lawyers on staff, so there's enough certified smart people in that place to keep me on my toes. I've read through probably about 2 inches of material already on the work that they did. I reviewed Senate Bill 916 that we passed in the waning moments of last session, having to do with the change in drug policy and eligibility for unemployment compensation. I think that even though these cases aren't as large as someone have you believe, they were cases that provoked legislation year after year. And so I think we finally addressed those in the last legislative session, and I think that as those work their way up through the system, I just reviewed the administrative law, the administrative rules that the agency is putting forward to enact 916, and there's still a little bit of confusion, I would have to say, around what we actually did the last day of the session when we voted this in. But this was the bill that went over, if you'll remember, from the Senate as excluding additional family members from having to pay unemployment insurance, and came back as AOI's drug bill that they had wanted for so long. So like anything that passes through at the end of the night in this building, there seems to be a few inconsistencies in it. But for the most part, it put in place something that that the employer side has been looking at for a long time. And the role of this board is basically to take the legislation that the legislature has put forward, and the rulemaking that's been done by the Employment Division, and make decisions on that basis. So I'm fully prepared to do that, and I ask for your endorsement.
Thank you. Comments or questions for Senator Corcoran?
Yeah, I don't seem to have a application on the good senator here. I'm wondering if that was on purpose. Or
no, I filled one out. It's a short application.
Yeah, this one.
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Senator Corcoran, you'll make this move immediately?
Yes, my intention is upon confirmation, if I'm confirmed this afternoon, that I would submit my resignation here this afternoon or tomorrow.
Something I didn't know in our election law is that technically you haven't, if this all occurs today, that means you haven't filled out you have to fill out half your term, and because you haven't filled out half your term, it becomes an appointment and your seat, the timing of your seat changes now.
No, the timing of the seat doesn't change. It just forces an election to stand in 2 years. That's right.
And then again, 2 years after that.
That's right.
It stays on the same schedule.
It stays on the same schedule, but it does force one additional election.
Thank you. On this job, so you'll be in charge of the budget and in charge of coming and asking us for money and all that stuff?
No, my understanding, Senator, is that the administrative duties of the board are handled by the chair at no additional salary, as she pointed out to me. And the funding, my understanding is that the funding is federal funding tied into UI, and so I presume that the agency comes to the, you know, to the legislature for their funding, it's not general funded.
So you will be in charge of making policy, though, or affecting policy in any way?
Not there is a very rare exception in the law that would allow the board some latitude, but for the most part, lawyers that works for the board, staff lawyer David Olson, wrote this excellent briefing on higher appeals and administrative law, and I just underlined a few things. Agencies are creatures of statute and exercise only the powers they are granted by statute. In essence, our role in this, the board does not make decisions based on what it seems right or on the personal views of the board members, and it isn't allowed a flexible issue of justice. They basically have to apply legal standards given to it by the legislature. So a lot of it is just, I think, if you just walk through the process, a claimant applies for unemployment insurance. The employer objects. The agency makes an administrative ruling. Either of the parties object. It goes to an administrative law judge for a hearing. Purpose of the administrative law judge is to create a record. And issue an opinion. That opinion can be appealed, and we're the board of appeals for the opinions of administrative law judges. And then we're basically to look at the case de novo, have the new restate the facts of the case, and then make a decision and give a justification for the decision. But it appears to me that there's very little latitude, and in fact what you're doing is walking, it's sort of the reverse of the legislature. You're walking back through the process from the rules to the statute and the intent of the statute. So.
As you've studied that timeline, is there efficiencies you think you can find in that, or do you think it's working pretty well?
Well,
or do you know yet?
I don't. I guess the short answer would be I don't. It appears, Senator, that there is somewhat of a backlog, and it's not directly related to the ebb and flow of the economy, but it wouldn't surprise anybody probably that there's a backlog in unemployment claims when we have high unemployment, but that isn't necessarily a cause-effect relationship. But right now they do have somewhat of a backlog, and apparently it's basically a lot of reading, and it appears that the way it's set up is that two of the three board members will read a case, and if they both agree, then on their findings, then those go forward, edited, by the legal staff. And if they have a disagreement, then the third party, the third person on the board reads them, and they work on that.
Are you going to have to give up your column?
Yes.
So I can't get my name in the Register Guard anymore?
You could, Senator, and you probably will, I assume once the Republicans are organized in the Senate that your name will appear often with Senator Beyer.
That's nice.
But I'll do whatever I can for you from an executive position. I mean, that's what you've got to remember.
Are you looking for an appointment?
I don't want to get in between you two, Senator.
Anybody else? So Senator Fisher?
You're looking at me.
Well, your finger went up, and I didn't know if you were okay, all right.
Madam Chair?
Actually, I had one last question.
I doubt if I could add anything to the conversation.
I apologize for being late, and this probably already came up repeatedly, but I just want to make sure that you're on the record that you're not going to be discriminating in any way against tall persons.
Senator Burdick, I, for one, was shocked that you weren't here on time. Having served on several committees with you, and yes, you're prescient now in understanding that those kind of topics have come up over and over again before you got here. So, I mean, unless you want me to redundantly answer that, I promise you I'll be a paragon of Christian virtue with regard to tall people.
Thank you. That's most reassuring, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Burdick. I'm going to move into work session on the Employment Appeals Board. Senator Beyer.
What were you in?
It was public hearing because we did not have a quorum.
Oh, I didn't get a quorum because Jimmy wasn't here?
Well,
I have a lot of things, but I'm not a one-woman quorum.
Madam Chair, I move to recommend the confirmation of an appointment of Tony Corcoran to the Employment Appeals Board.
Senator Beyer has moved to recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Senator Tony Corcoran to the Employment Appeals Board. Is there any further discussion?
The only thing that I would say is I note the great trust that Tony has in us that he hasn't resigned before he came here.
You got that right, Senator Fisher.
You know this too well, Senator.
You're as astute as anyone in the building, Senator.
Thank you,
but on the other hand, Senator, keep in mind I have been informing some of your colleagues that this is, in fact, a win-win situation for the Republic.
Senator Corcoran, thanks for your willingness to continue to serve the public, and we are going to miss you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
With that, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Senator Danlin?
Yes.
Senator Fisher?
Yes.
Senator Chair Byers?
Aye.
And Chair Brown?
Brown votes aye. Motion carries.
You can carry that one.
Senator Burdick, would you like to carry
it? I'd be thrilled to carry
it. Senator Burdick would be thrilled to carry that one. Senator.
Chair, are you still in work session on this one?
Yes, that is correct.
I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of the reappointment of Mary Feldbrug to the Employment Appeals Board.
I think so. Senator Beyer has moved to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Mary Feldbrug to the Employment Appeals Board. It's a reappointment. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion carries.
Do you want to do that one?
Yeah. Senator Burdick, why don't you carry that one as well? You want to do the lottery question?
Sure. Okay. They're here.
There you go.
Please, go ahead. Oh, I thought you meant.
Oh. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on the Lottery Commission and ask that Richard Solomon and Carrie Timchuk come forward, please. And while they're coming forward, I did want to recognize Jan McComb is pinch hitting for our staffer, Marjorie Taylor, who is in a foreign country. And I also wanted to introduce Senator Richard Devlin this morning, who is our newest member to rule. So welcome, Senator Devlin. I assume that you will not cause as much trouble as Senator Corcoran.
I will be as quiet and reserved as Senator Corcoran.
Because no one was here.
Exactly.
Who would like to go first? Good morning and welcome. Dick, you want to go first?
Please
okay.
do. I'm pleased to be here to meet with you today, and I'm particularly honored that the governor has the confidence in me to appoint me to this important position. I believe my experience and background prepare me for this responsibility. I've been a CPA for over 25 years, advising a wide variety of businessmen and women. During that time, I've also served on numerous boards and commissions. The people of Oregon expect and deserve that the Oregon State Lottery will continue to be operated with integrity in a businesslike manner. I hope to use my skills to achieve those ends. Thank you for your consideration of my nomination.
Thank you. Carrie?
Thank you very much. Co-chairs Brandon Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Timchek, and I'm honored to appear before you today as the governor's nominee for the Oregon Lottery Commission. When the governor first approached me several months ago and asked if I'd be interested in serving on this commission, my first reaction was, I thought, you like me. Actually, the governor said he was looking for someone with a reputation for bipartisanship and for working to bring people together. The only agenda I bring with me to the Lottery Commission is to work to see that it is run in a professional and cost-effective manner with complete integrity. I have met with Director Rockland and believe she is doing an outstanding job. She has provided me with reading material on lottery operations and future challenges, and I look forward to receiving additional material. It goes without saying that the lottery is a unique animal. It needs to be successful, especially in these times when every last dollar is so important to the state budget, but you almost don't want it to be too successful. Several legislators have let me know that they have very strong opinions on lottery issues, and as a commissioner, I think the commission needs to look to the governor and the legislature for guidance on these important issues. I look forward to serving if confirmed.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator Fisher, you're just having fun.
I was wondering if perhaps our former Secretary of State had made up this compilation here on the front page that lists Mr. Timchek is a Democrat.
Whoops. We, Senator Smith and Senator Wyden, have an unusual relationship, and I registered as a Democrat, and his chief of staff registered as a Republican. So,
this was our former Secretary of State listed me in the 1993 Blue Book as a Democrat, which I tweeted him over a time or two.
Let the record show that Mr. Timchek is registered as a Republican.
That is correct. So.
Anything else for this group? Thank you very much. I think it's good to catch us in the morning when we don't have a lot of questions. Thanks for being here. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, before we go any further, is Senator, or soon-to-be former Senator Corcoran still in the room?
No.
No, I don't.
No, we really pulled one over on him, didn't we? We don't have a committee yet, and he thinks he's getting secure.
Just to point out to the committee, we have not adopted rules yet, so we'll probably have to do everything we've done
all over again, procedurally, so...
But we
did not adopt rules.
It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Oh, this is going to be sweet when that gets to the floor. Especially we wait till after he resigns.
Yes. Go.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
We have all been given the rules, I assume?
Yes.
I move adoption of the committee rules as presented to the committee.
Senator Beyer moves adoption of the Senate Interim Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments Committee Rules. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
And now should we start
over? It seems like we haven't ever left, Senator Beyer. Yes.
Madam Chair.
We don't need to do the first appointment.
If you would feel better about doing
it,
then
we can.
Hey, I don't mind technicality.
Okay. Go, Senator Beyer, do them over.
I would hate
for you to challenge Senator Corcoran's appointment.
I'll start, Madam Chair. I move to recommend the confirmation of the appointments of, I guess we can do these two together, of Richard Solomon and Carrie Timchek to the Lottery Commission.
Senator Beyer has moved the confirmation of the appointments of Richard Solomon and Carrie Timchek to the Lottery Commission. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I wish to declare a potential conflict of interest because Dick Solomon is my accountant.
Okay.
And that has a lot to do with why I am so impressed by his qualifications because I've seen them in action. So.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Burdick. Please note for the record, Senator Burdick declares a potential conflict of interest. Any other comments?
We're back.
Questions? Any objection to those two appointments? Seeing none. Motion carries. Next up, work session on the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors. We have agreed to waive the appearance of Senator Mark Hatfield, and I believe coming forward is Henry Hewitt.
I think we would like to carry.
Sarah Atkinson, would you like to carry the Lottery Commission appointments? Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Chair Brown, Chair Beyer, I was disappointed about waiving the appearance of Mark Hatfield. I was hoping he would be here. I could coattail on his fine record and history of contributions. For the record, my name is Henry Hewitt. I'm an attorney with Stoll Reeves in Portland, where I serve as chair of the firm. For more than 30 years, I've been a business lawyer and advisor to a wide range of business enterprises in Oregon. I'm currently a board member of Hampton Resources, Columbia Forest Products, PPM Energy, and I'm a member of various strategic planning and policy committees at PacifiCorp. Throughout my career, I've seen many very well-run businesses and a few that, from time to time, weren't so well-run. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to serve as a member of the board of OHSU. It's a very important institution. I'm keenly interested in education and science. Honored to have been recommended to this panel. And if I'm confirmed, I hope to make a valuable contribution to its long-term success in Portland and in Oregon. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Anybody with any questions?
No, just a comment, Madam Chair. I just think we have an embarrassment of riches here today, and I'm really happy that you're willing to serve on this board. I think you're doing a fabulous job.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay. Thank you. I think there's no questions, and so we'll go ahead and move into work session.
Thank you very much.
Coming down. Our session, Senator Burdick.
I move that we confirm the appointment of Henry Hewitt to the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors and the reappointment of Mark Hatfield.
Senator Burdick has moved to recommend the confirmation of Henry Hewitt to the Oregon Health and Sciences University Board of Directors and waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Senator Hatfield to the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion carries. Congratulations and thank you. And we may carry some of these in black, so I'm going to hold on a carrier in that. With that, we'll open a public hearing and work session on the Port of Portland Board of Commissioners. We've agreed to waive the appearance of Mary Olson and Grant Zato. Judith Johansson, come on forward.
Good morning. I am Judy Johansson. And I am the president and CEO of PacifiCorp, and I'm here today regarding the Clackamas County seat on the Port of Portland. I have been honored by being asked to serve in this capacity by the governor, and I understand the importance of the port to the region's economy and the many issues that are vital for the state, and I think my background both at Bonneville Power Administration and PacifiCorp give me the experience and the knowledge of some of the challenges that are brought with the Port of Portland. I have some experience with the Columbia River issues and the importance that the Columbia River plays to the state economy, and I look forward to working with the Port of Portland and serving the state in this capacity.
Questions for Judy Johansson?
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I move to recommend the confirmation of Judith Johansson to the Port of Portland Board of Commissioners.
Senator Beyer has moved to recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Judith Johansson to the Port of Portland Board of Commissioners. Do you want to make a comment? Okay.
I'd like to thank Judith for calling me the other day and having a chat on the phone, and have to ask her to report back to me when she finds the answer to the second toughest question I gave her. I've got the answer to the toughest question. The last question I asked her is how the vote in Multnomah County is going to come out.
I didn't want to speculate.
That was on Tuesday, so she didn't know yet, but we both have the answer to that question now. But the other question on the relationship of the Port of Portland with the other ports in the state and along the Columbia River, and have you get back to me when you figure that out?
I'm happy to do that, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Any further? Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out for the record that Ms. Johansson is a constituent of mine, as is one of the reappointments that we have, Mr. Zadow.
Okay.
So now I have two out of the members of the commission. I'm looking to get to 4 to 5 within the next 2 years.
You'll have a bit of a problem with me on that.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. I thought you would wake up here shortly. Okay, any further conversation?
Are we on TV?
Yes.
I have time for one.
Would you like to ask a question, Senator?
How'd you get my cell phone number?
I don't know.
I think I know.
I just do what I'm told, Senator.
I apologize, I missed you. I've been
That's
traveling.
Right.
I could ask that same question.
Yeah. I gave it to her. I give it out to anybody who asked, Senator Breyer. I got it on the internet, actually.
Time to change.
Thanks for coming. Any further conversation, comments? Okay. Any objection to the appointment? Seeing none, motion carries. And Senator Breyer, we need another motion on the other two.
Madam Chair, I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Mary Olson and Grant Zebo to the Port of Portland Commissioners.
Senator Byers moved to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation of Mary Olson and Grant Zedo to the Port of Portland Board of Commissioners. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Great. Thanks for being here. Next up, we have the Tourism Commission. I'd like to ask Jeffrey Constam, Patrick Nofield, and Carrie Ann Westland.
Yeah, do you want to name a board carrier?
No, I'm going to wait. I'll probably do these in block. Good morning. Welcome. Who would like to start?
Okay. Good morning, Chairman Brown and Chairman Beyer. My name is Carrie Ann Westland. I am currently employed as the President and CEO of the Convention and Visitors Association of Lane County, Oregon. Based in Eugene, our organization markets the entirety of Lane County from Florence on the Oregon coast up to the top of the Cascades. I've been in that position for 7 years. I'm beginning my eighth year, and prior to that did similar work in the state of Alaska, where I had the good fortune to serve on the statewide marketing council in that state. I am quite honored and thrilled to be nominated for appointment to the Oregon Tourism Commission at this time. I think we're beginning one of the most exciting periods in our industry's history, and am really looking forward upon confirmation to helping to ensure that the economic returns that we're all anticipating will come to Oregon from the passage of House Bill 2267 do in fact materialize, and we'll be diligent to that end to make sure those funds are invested well to serve Oregon's economy to the best of our ability. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go next.
Good morning, Co-Chairman Beyer, Co-Chairman Brown, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Nofield, and I'm president of Escape Lodging in Cannon Beach, Oregon. And my partner and I own two hotels in Cannon Beach, the Inn at Cannon Beach, and we recently built the Ocean Lodge. Additionally, we manage a hotel in Seaside. We own a hotel in the Dalles, Oregon, called Cousins Country Inn, and a restaurant chain that we've got going called Cousins, which is home-style cooking, really good food. Here we go there. And we recently opened a Cousins in Bend, Oregon. The vision for my company is to continue to develop this Cousins restaurant concept, as well as do nice, quality-oriented boutique lodgings and nice places where you want to recreate. I'm a native Oregonian. I'm excited about this appointment to the Tourism Commission. I believe we have an awesome state, and as Carrie mentioned, I believe we have the resources now through the passage of House Bill 2267 to actually compete with other states and become a major player in Oregon. And I'm excited about the opportunity to jumpstart our economy. I believe my background in hospitality, my background in business and marketing, and just having a finger on the pulse of the state with the different businesses we hold will help me in this appointment. I thank you for your consideration.
Right.
Good morning. Tough act to follow here. My name is Jeff Constam, and I operate Timberline Lodge in Clackamas County up on Mount Hood. And I'm a native Oregonian as well. Grew up in the Portland area. We've operated Timberline Lodge since 1955 as a family. It's a family-owned business, and we've got a relationship with the federal government, the Forest Service. And our lease at Timberline is, I think, the second longest lease family-owned business with the Forest Service in the country. So I'm very proud of Oregon, very proud of the state, and if I'm confirmed, look very much forward to working on this commission. There's an excellent group of people who are dedicated to the promotion of business and economic development in the state of Oregon. Tourism is an interesting facet to start to do that. I think the governor sees that, and I think many Oregonians do. I think tourism is an excellent bridge politically for our state, geographically and philosophically. I think Oregon has a tremendous amount to sell. We've done it in sort of a soft fashion in the past. I know my friends who come to visit Oregon are coming to experience the lifestyle that we all cherish. And I think that with the new tourism dollars, we'll be able to promote that a little bit more effectively. We've been effective in the past, but I think this new bill represents really a level of investment that the state should require in promoting tourism in the state of Oregon as one state. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for the panel?
No questions.
Sarah Atkinson.
I'm curious as to what all three of your vision is for Oregon south of you and east of you. It's where I spend all my time, and I think there's a tremendous amount of feeling out there that part of southern and southeastern Oregon believes that they're nothing more than a playground from people who live up here. So what's your view as a tourism commissioner? Are we going to promote south and southeastern Oregon as a playground, or is there a better component to it?
Well, I like playgrounds, so but I visit your part of the state often. My vision, personally, is it's one Oregon. And I have a strong feeling that in the past we've been a little bit what I call valley-centric in the way that we look at the state of Oregon. And I think that the approach needs to be for the entire state. And we're currently going around as a commission listening to people from every part of the state. And we want to take the interests of those folks into account in the way that we go about this. And I think that everyone on the commission feels very strongly about that.
I think the stories of Eastern Oregon and Southern Oregon are some of the most compelling that we have. And I don't know that those have been ignored in the past, but I think I heard at a recent retreat in Joseph where the commission gathered and those of we were allowed to participate in that. I heard Jeff say that several times there in terms of one Oregon. I heard other commissioners say it too. I heard a lot of ratification of the importance of the whole state and how much of our state is actually outside the valley and the importance of telling those stories effectively and drawing visitors internationally and nationally to those stories. I also think, though, realistically, that for Eastern Oregon and Southern Oregon, particularly for Eastern Oregon, you really want to look at high-yield visitors. You probably wouldn't want to try and generate the numbers of visitors to Eastern Oregon that Portland hosts. But what you do want to do is generate high-yield visitors out to those areas so that the visitors that are going are spending a lot of money per person, and I think that probably fits in well with what people in Eastern Oregon want too. So that's what we'll be working to do.
I had a kind of a wild mentor, and he had a lot of sayings that I can't share here. But he used to say, if my neighbor's doing well, I'm doing well. Our competition is Disneyland. Our competition is Hawaii. And I think, as Jeff and Carrie stated, the focus is on Oregon. And as people discover the diversity of our state, the wonderful outdoor recreational opportunities that we provide, it's going to migrate throughout the state. So I think there's a benefit. But that's totally our focus and our vision.
This session, we passed a bill, obviously, the tourism package, and I'm just curious as to if any of you have any thoughts as to what we should be doing as we enter the next session, which, of course, may occur in February, to promote your industry.
I do. Well, I think one of the keys for the industry and one of the things the industry overall is watching the legislature to see what happens is in terms of the lottery funding support that the commission has received in the past. I think as we started to move, work to move this legislation forward and ratify its passage, we were very hopeful that we would continue to see at least some lottery funding and that this money could be seen as incremental, at least in the early going so that we can really try and catch up and make up the ground that we've lost in terms of market share lost nationally. So that's a specific answer to what was a specific question.
Thank you. Anybody else? Jeff, say hi to your mother for me.
I will. Thank
you. Okay. On that happy note, we will move into work session. Do you want to pull Roger in and see if he wants to vote on this one?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Sorry.
You want a motion?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, I recommend that we can recommend the confirmation of Jeffrey Constam, Patrick Nofield, and Carrie Ann Westland to the Tourism Commission.
Senator Burke has moved that we recommend the confirmation of Jeffrey Constam, Patrick Nofield, and Carrie Ann Westland, providing she's not related to Senator Ben Westland, to the Tourism Commission.
You know that before we vote?
I think we're safe. to the Tourism Commission, is there any discussion, any further discussion, any objection to the motion? Hearing, seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you for your willingness to serve the state. Thanks for being here this morning. Okay. Why don't we take a few minutes? We might have recess now. Okay. All right. For business, let's do the withdrawal of appointments, please.
Members of the committee, you had mailed to you the packet of background information, the boards and commissions that were carried over, the governor's letter of withdrawal of John Barton of Port of Coos Bay, and the governor's letter of appointment of Jim Willis to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And before you, that's new, is a corrected legislative review for the Lottery Commission, a corrective board roster for the Lottery Commission, the governor's withdrawal letter of his appointment to the chiropractic board, and the governor's withdrawal letter of his three appointments to the Quality Education Commission. So we just need to get that on the record.
Okay. Thank you.
He took out the Quality Education
Commission. Yes. He withdrew those appointments. So then I want you to do the motion for Tony. And just in case so that Senator Corcoran doesn't resign and then run into trouble on the Senate floor, I'm going to have Senator Beyer redo that motion, as well as Mary Feld Brooks.
Madam Chair, I move to recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Tony Corcoran for the Employment Appeals Board officially for the record after we have committee rules.
Senator Beyer has moved that we recommend the confirmation of Senator Tony Corcoran to the Employment Appeals Board, as well as waiving the appearance and recommending the confirmation of Mary Fuldbrug to the Employment Appeals Board. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing none, it is so ordered. With that, we will open a public hearing and work session on the Veterans Affairs Director, Jim Willis. Would you please come forward? And I know that we have members of the audience wishing to testify, and we will get to you. So. Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Brown. My name is Jim Willis, for the record, and I'm joined this morning by the Deputy Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Paula Brown, on my left, and on my right, the Chief Financial Officer, Bruce Schreiber. So good morning to you and members of the committee.
Good morning.
I, like the other folks who are appearing before you this morning, am very honored to have been selected by the governor and to have received the unanimous support of the Governor's Advisory Committee to the Department on Veterans Affairs. I am a native Oregonian, born in Portland, raised in Albany, and as is required by statute, I am a war veteran from Vietnam. I have just concluded 32 years of service as a law enforcement officer and 14 years of administrative service to the state of Oregon under the leadership of four governors. I have a deep commitment to the care for Oregon veterans, their families, and their survivors. I have long believed that those of us who came home from the battle in one piece owed a debt to those who did not and to the families that were left behind. These were lessons that were taught to me by my father, who was a World War II combat veteran and survivor of the Battle of the Bulge. I have found on my arrival at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs that that is a department consisting of men and women who are deeply committed to serving Oregon's veterans community and their families and survivors. And that the unique thing about them, perhaps in some settings that people see, is these people are not clock watchers. They concern themselves with the things that go beyond the law. They concern themselves with finding out everything they can in every way they can to help these families. Oregon, at this period of time, has more National Guard, both air and ground assets, committed per capita in this nation than any other state. When those people come home, they will be certified veterans. They will have served the required number of days in combat zones or in a setting that will award them an expeditionary medal. My commitment to you is that on behalf of myself and the employees of the department, we will be ready when those Oregonians return. We will go to those demobilization ceremonies. We also attend the mobilization ceremonies, and I can tell you, as some of you have also attended, seeing those families separated by these people's willingness to voluntarily serve their nation reconstitutes my belief in this system of government and the preservation of freedom. So the least we can do at my department, myself and everyone with whom I work, is to make sure that the benefits to which these men and women are entitled are preserved, are easily understood, and are conveyed to them in a timely way. And you have my commitment that I will do that. Thank you, Senator, very much.
Either of you wish to add anything?
Well, I hadn't planned to do this, but I would be happy to for just a moment. I did, as I was sitting there, write down a few things that I think are very important about Jim. I've known Jim.
We need your name for the record.
I'm Paula Brown, the Deputy Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
And no relationship to this co-chair, at least that we're aware of.
That is correct. I've known Jim for a number of years. I've worked with him and interacted with him on many occasions on a number of projects and programs, including the advisory committee to the director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, during the legislative session, and during a number of veterans events. I've seen his dedication to veterans firsthand, to the state of Oregon, and I've seen the fair and honest manner in which he has treated all individuals in which he's come in contact with. He's passionate about veterans, there's no doubt about it. He's very knowledgeable about the issues facing veterans. He has the experience to do this job. I believe he's the best person for this job, and I look forward and hope that his confirmation will happen. I look forward to that. He's the best person for the job. Thank you.
Questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Jim, most of us, or at least some of us, received what I would consider to be a fairly serious note here in a letter, and a court letter also here that revolved around a case where apparently there was some question as to the truthfulness of some of your statements made and some of the claims that were brought up there, and I wonder if you would mind perhaps enlightening us a bit on this, because I believe the case ultimately wound up costing the state about $212,500 or some such amount, and I think that's something that we need to feel somewhat secure in the fact before we make this appointment that or this recommendation that we've at least heard both sides of this particular situation, and I would appreciate your commenting on that.
I believe the letter that you're referring to made an allegation specifically to what you've just raised, that I am a discriminatory person, specifically that I was discriminatory toward women, and also as it pertained to people's age. My position then was, and it is today, that is not who I am as a person. It never has been. Anyone who has worked with me for a protracted period of time, men and women, will tell you that I am a fair person, and that in the area of people's civil rights and affirmative action issues, I have been a strong advocate. It's interesting to me that during that exact same era that this allegation is made against me is the same year that the leadership team of the Department of the Oregon State Police won the Affirmative Action Agency of the Year, a fact for which I am very proud. Let me simply say to you, Senator, that it is not possible to serve in senior leadership roles for over 20 years and not have some employees disagree or disagree with your method of leadership. I'm saddened that this person feels the way that they do, but it is absolutely not who I am as a person. And I stand on my reputation for how I treat people and the fairness in which I would ask to be judged with regard to my total reputation in state service.
I guess the thing that concerned me as much as anything was the allegation that some of the testimony you made was denied by former governor's staff and supposedly some of the statements that you made concerning that were not correct. And that, I guess, is the problem that I have more than anything else. I certainly know as an employer, having employed lots of people myself, I understand the fact that you're never going to satisfy everybody and that you can have frustrating things. But my concern was that there was some almost an allegation here that you had been told to do something by a former governor's staff, and they denied it, and subsequently, you know, whether you were the fall guy for something or something like that, I don't know, but I have a problem with that aspect.
Well,
somebody, you know, to me, there comes a point where I'm not interested in taking a fall for something. I'm now part company with any organization that I'm involved with. If they expect me to compromise my integrity, and I guess that is what I would like to get to the bottom of as much as anything, not just necessarily there was a dispute over whether someone should or should not have been let go.
Chair Brown and Senator Fisher, let me tell you that as recently as last week, I reviewed my entire transcript of my affidavit. I stand completely behind that affidavit and every statement that I made in it. I will not, for a governor or anyone else, sacrifice my personal integrity or my reputation. And I have not. It is important to me to get on with the work of the Department of Veterans Affairs, but it is more important to me that every senator not have any question about this issue. If that means that you want to review that affidavit, which I made under oath, I am more than happy to share it with you. The words I said on those days 8.5 years ago are as true today as they were then. And I'm simply going to tell you that what you are reading is not an accurate representation of what happened. I don't know how to say it any clearer than that. It is not who I am as a person, and it never has been.
Along those same lines, the parties to these, there was a settlement agreement reached as a result of the lawsuit. The parties involved, I assume the state, the plaintiff, yourself, I don't know, I don't have the legal documents in front of me. Were all the parties required to sign a confidentiality agreement following the settlement so that no one would be talking about the settlement, or was there any no such confidentiality?
I was not a party to the settlement agreement. And okay. The issue, since it is now on the record, and that's fine because it happened, there was an issue. the thing that I wish the committee members to all understand is that when an allegation is made, it brings in the Department of Administrative Services, it brings in risk management, it brings in counsel, attorneys, and they conference in terms of allegation and what they believe would be best for the state with regard to that particular claim. The individual directly involved, such as myself, has nothing to say about that settlement. In this particular case, and since again it's come before this committee, I want to say to the full committee, and especially to Senator Fisher, I wanted to go to trial. I wish we had. I was not afforded that opportunity, and therefore the findings that were made were the findings that were made, and I was never heard in a court of law. And I think that's important to know.
Jim, I thank you for being candid.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's something that, certainly reviewing your record, you have an impressive record.
Thank you,
sir. I think you even, if I'm not mistaken, sir, several years on my neck of the woods.
Yes, sir.
And,
now, you were kind enough to allow me to find my wife down there, Senator.
Well, a lot of good things come out of that.
Yes, sir.
But it is it concerns me because,
yes, sir.
And partially because there are some things that happened during my association with former governor staff that were very unsavory as far as I was concerned in some of the operations that took place. And I appreciate your, as I say, your candidness and your explanation. And in my knowledge of you, I have not known you to be other than a man of your word.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anything further from Committee Member Senator Atkinson?
I saw a publication this morning called, I think it was Bet News.
Yes, sir.
Does that come out of the agency?
It does, sir.
The headline I saw this morning said that you were already director or something to that effect?
Acting director.
No, it says acting.
What's the headline say?
Well, I don't remember exactly, but the editor is next to me here. So.
Yes. And actually, I don't remember exactly the headline. I believe it's Jim Willis to lead the department as director. And actually, there is a sentence in there that indicates that Jim's confirmation, it kind of explains what happened. The governor made the appointment. The advisory committee unanimously approved that appointment, and that there is a statement in there that indicates that Jim's confirmation, Senate confirmation, was scheduled for November at the time of that printing. We certainly didn't want to assume that that was going to happen, although we all expected that it would, but we did put that in there for that reason. But that's a good question.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you. Mr. Willis, I have a long period of association with the former director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I consider him to be one of the best career administrators that the state has ever had, particularly in that role. Going away from the issue that the committee has been discussing and talking about veterans in general and some of the services that you provide, I'm saying this because I may have to come to you in the very near future with a veterans issue.
Yes, sir.
From a constituent. Do you think that veterans deserve the benefit of a doubt rather than simply the strict interpretation of rules in terms of trying to see that their needs are met? I've had some cases before with constituents, so not so much with the Department of Veterans Affairs, but with the VA administration.
Let me answer that, Senator, in this way, Chair Brown. The Federal Department of Veterans Affairs and the Oregon Department and the County Veteran Service Officer Program, in my view, is a continuum of service. And in order to avoid those kind of cases that you've just raised, I think it's very important that each of those elements communicate with each other all the time. And the reason for it is to avoid cases like the one you're describing. Because as an example, if a veterans counselor at the state level advises a veteran with regard to a benefit that is issued federally. And then they interact with the federal folks, and somebody quotes a subsection of a rule and so on and so forth, and it has a negative reaction on that person.
Okay.
Then the whole system is viewed by that person as broken or not serving veterans in the way that it should. The thing that I'm so proud of with regard to our counselors, and I hope this is answering your question, is that they will look at every possible way to acquire that benefit for the veteran if they're entitled. And we have had cases on comp claims, as an example, claims of compensation, where the first time they went for their comp exam, they didn't achieve their claim. They came back to our counselor. The counselor walked them through the process again. They again kept their daily medical diary and other requirements. And the next time they went through, they got the claim. So the issue is to not give up on the veteran, and the issue is to not ever be so rule-bound that you can't find a legal solution to that veteran claim. That's my best answer, Senator, for that.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
We've talked about this before, Jim, but the legislature, I believe, passed these in the early 90s, the mid-90s, waived the certificate of need process for building the veterans' home in the Dalles. Last session, we passed a bill eliminating the prohibition on general fund allocation for that facility. Could you talk about what direction you see your department going under your leadership in terms of that particular facility, and whether in fact you will seek general fund dollars for that facility next biennium?
In the short term, if there is a need in the 05-07 biennium to seek funding, the only need I could see right now to seek it for would be a maintenance cost of some kind, because the building has to be maintained. We do have a trust fund that is maintained through the generous donation of Oregonians, veterans, of agencies, and so on. I hope that, and we're a ways from that session, but I would hope that we would not have to come to the body for funds for the care of the residents. So, as I've said before, if we did, it would be a maintenance issue and not a care issue.
Okay. Any further?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
This may be something more, because I've had a long dealing with the situation as a long-term care provider in the Roseburg area.
Yes, sir.
We've dealt at length with the VA hospital there and the problems that we've had, where the state will take over the operation and the conservatorship of someone's money, but they turn them loose with money in the community, and they do all kinds of havoc and stuff like that, and there's no follow-up to the restraining of these people, and they've damaged other neighbors' property. They bought houses and lived in areas there and done all kinds of destructive things and terrorized the neighbors and stuff like that. And I've had three or four times when I've tried to work with them, and they say, well, all we do is the money. We don't have any control over them. And this is very, very frustrating to people, when if somebody is judged to be so mentally aberrant that he can't take care of his own funds, there ought to also be some guardianship situation that would evolve in the overseeing of this person's conduct, just besides allowing him to only have so much money a month or that kind of thing. And I've had that happen on more than one occasion there in the Roseburg area, and so I would say that more for your benefit of knowledge of what sometimes happens to us out there that are trying to deal with these problems in the communities. And if there was any possibility that you had some input on things of that nature and could help to solve some of those problems, it would sure be a big help.
Well, I'll be more than happy to be available to those communities when those kinds of things happen. And because of my previous employment, there's a good chance I would know the people in the agencies that are having the difficulty.
By the way, we did get some help from that, even though they really didn't have the authority, but in one case, the fellow was properly afraid of what would happen, and a verbal threat that probably couldn't have been carried out did the job. But so, yeah, that would certainly be a help, I'm sure, to end the process.
Be happy to do that.
Anything further? Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Jane Edwards. Good morning.
Good morning. I'll give you a copy here of my testimony. And I'm not going to read it verbatim. And I also have, I need more copies. I have here. And then I have, again, copies of Judge Abernathy's opinion. Let me,
need you to state your name for the record.
Yes, thank you. Chair Brown, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Jane Edwards, and I live in Portland. And I thank you for the opportunity to come here to testify today. Let me say I respect Governor Kulongowski, but I believe that this appointment is wrong. And point out that Mr. Willis has no experience in education in the home mortgage business, which is the primary function of the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I add parenthetically that 20 years ago, the DVA had problems similar to PERS of today, where they had borrowed money at a higher rate of interest than they lent it, and as a consequence jeopardized the state bonds. But to tell you about myself, I graduated from law school in 1970, first in my class. I practiced law in Portland, came to work for the state in 1975, and worked in several agencies, including what is now the Department of Administrative Services, then the Executive Department, working on budgets, some of which related to public safety and criminal justice issues. In November 1991, I was hired by the Executive Department to manage federal criminal justice funds. And I want to stress that I held a mid-level position and dealt in process, not policy. And essentially, what I was trying to do was set up a process so that we could have fairly consider applications, get necessary information for determining whether the money was doing any good. I also had to prepare a drug and violent crime strategy, which was required by the U.S. Department of Justice. In 1994, Congress passed a new crime bill, and it was a very complicated, very long bill. It had a number of new programs for states, and I spent a lot of time trying to get up to speed on that. In October of 1994, we were administratively transferred from the Executive Department to the Department of State Police. Now, I had nothing to do. I was never asked for my opinion on this. I was simply told that we would be going there, and I was placed under the supervision of Mr. Willis. And he was in a new position, which had been created to supervise a number of programs, dissimilar programs, which included the Fire Marshal, the Boxing and Wrestling Commission, and others. In December and January of that year, I wrote the Drug and Violent Crime Strategy. And I was very, very proud. I have a copy of the document here, and it was certainly something I was very proud of, and a very comprehensive document related to a lot of to Oregon's issues and a lot of data related to our problems with drug use and crime. On February 6, 1995, I went to an OSP staff meeting. It was Monday morning. They were held every Monday morning. And he came and told me that he wanted me to go to a meeting in another office. So I followed him to another office. He told me I was fired, effective the next day, because he wanted a change of direction. He wouldn't explain what that meant. I pointed out that my position was probably not unclassified, but it was probably in the classified civil service, and he could not legally fire me without a hearing, without cause, and he simply ignored that. I was allowed to go back to my office, guarded by a state police lieutenant, to remove my personal possessions. The process was humiliating. It was designed to be humiliation. I have seen people do horrendous things in the state, and they may be eased, and they're eased out gracefully. I mean, I was summarily fired, and I have never, never, never been told a reason for that. And let me add that once I filed the lawsuit, we took the depositions of Gary Weeks, Steve Marks, Superintendent Howland of the State Police, Jim Willis, And no one ever came up with any reason for firing me. I mean, no one came up and said, you did this wrong, you did this wrong. And, in fact, when I filed the lawsuit, Judge Abernethy found that there had been no credible reason for firing me other than Mr. Willis had gone to the governor's staff, and Steve Marks primarily, and said that he thought someone else should be in the position, and Steve Marks said okay. I will tell you, during the transition, I had absolutely no opportunity to ever talk to any of those governor's staff. I mean, I simply wasn't that important. Being fired is devastating. Because we lost half our income. My husband was working, and that obviously helped. And I'd say parenthetically, my husband's a veteran, and we've had a DVA loan. We had three daughters, one of whom just graduated from college. One was in college, and one was about to enter college. This was not only humiliating for me, it was humiliating for my family. And I can tell you, to this day, people will assume that I did something to deserve this treatment. In some ways, and this will sound like a stretch to you, but in some ways I liken it to domestic violence. We can't believe that things were irrational, so we tend to believe that the victim deserved the treatment. Now, the next day, to get back to my story, Mr. Willis hired a 26-year-old man for my position, and I was 52 years old at the time. This young man had graduated from law school, had not taken the Oregon bar, and had worked on Governor Kitzhaber's campaign. And I can say the civil service laws were designed to prevent exactly this turn of events. About a little over a year later, Mr. Willis had this young man's position reclassified so that he went from pay range 30, which at that time was a range of 3206 to 4301, to pay range 33, which with a maximum of 4984 per month. And he was able to do this by abolishing a police lieutenant's position they decided they didn't need. I also add that, and I'm going to pass this out, but here, the governor's drug and violent crime strategy, my name, within a few weeks of my firing, there was a big press conference. The governor, Kitzhaber, unveiled this strategy, which I had written, and my name was taken off, my successor's name put on. And just give you, just take a name. Now, I talked to my attorneys, Dan O'Leary and Carol Burnick of Davis Wright Tremaine, and they're excellent attorneys, and I decided to file a lawsuit. This is not an easy thing to do. Sometimes the public gets the impression that people just nilly-willy file these lawsuits. I don't make allegations that I don't think are based in fact and in law. I knew that filing a lawsuit would cost me money that I didn't have because I didn't have a job. And I found that living under a lawsuit, living during a lawsuit, is very stressful. You go on with your life, the lawsuit is always there. It doesn't go away. And you have to be careful about what you do, who you talk to. I knew that in filing a lawsuit, my chances of getting back, if you will, into state government were nil, and perhaps getting a job in the private sector at my age would be very, very difficult as well. And I was able to patch together some temporary and short-term and part-time jobs until I was able to retire. Regarding Mr. Willis, Mr. Willis told a member of the Department of Administrative Services staff that Governor Kitzhaber had made the decision to replace me. When I filed a claim for unemployment, that staff person wrote that in response to the Employment Department's request. So that I file a claim, the Employment Department writes to DAS and says, why is this person unemployed? And what was written down was, Governor Kitzhaber made a decision to replace her. And that was because Mr. Willis had told this person, and this person testified under oath in her deposition that he had told her that. He also, I filed a claim with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which is required in order to file a civil rights lawsuit, and he said that I was the only female he'd ever fired, where in fact he had fired another woman about a year, perhaps a year and a half previously. The state filed a motion in the lawsuit. And the state didn't roll over in this lawsuit. And they didn't talk about resolution. They filed a motion for summary judgment, essentially throw us out of court, saying you don't have a case. We argued that before Judge Abernathy, I think in February of 1997, which time she suggested that Willis had, in effect, was responsible for this whole mess, and she suggested that he was a misogynist, and she used that word. She, in March 10, 1997, she wrote an opinion denying the state's motion for summary judgment. She found that there was adequate evidence to go forth on the discrimination claims, and the reason essentially was that no one had ever articulated any reason for firing me. It was change of direction. Mr. Willis said that he thought the governor's office would be more comfortable with somebody else. The staff in the governor's office said, you know, we didn't have any opinion on this. This was suggested by Mr. Willis. She also found that my position was in classified civil service and I could not be fired without cause. And everyone conceded that there was no cause. In December 1997, the state settled my lawsuit for $212,500. It could have been settled for substantially less, substantially earlier. I will say that I didn't want to file a lawsuit. I certainly wanted to work out some reasonable departure from the state, and I simply wasn't given the opportunity to do that. And I put the matter behind me, and this happened a long time ago, and I signed it, settled the case. My daughter was getting married in a couple of weeks. I went to the wedding. It was over. It was done. Until about a little over a month ago, I was reading in the Oregonian that Mr. Willis had been appointed as director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I thought to myself, this is not right. This is not a man that should have a leadership position in the state of Oregon. Mr. Willis is not a responsible administrator. A responsible administrator builds a team using the strengths of each employee. A responsible administrator advances the state's interests, not his own. A responsible administrator spends tax dollars wisely, and a responsible administrator tells the truth. And I would certainly be happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Edwards, thank you for coming before us today. Thanks for having the courage to come testify. I know the difficulties involved both in the lawsuit itself and just coming forward in front of this committee. Other questions? Ms. Edwards. Thank you. With that, I'm going to take a 10-minute recess, and we'll be back at 10 o'clock.
from the Department Director of Veterans Affairs, Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move we recommend the confirmation of Jim Willis to the Director of the Veterans Affairs Department.
Senator Beyer has moved that we recommend the confirmation of Jim Willis as Director of Department Affairs. Is there any discussion? Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In looking at this appointment, in looking at the testimony that's been brought forward and all the documentation, the one thing that I don't want to state for the record is that I think the two parties that have testified here relative to the what occurred 8.5 years ago probably both strongly believe what they have said to be accurate. But I don't view my role here today to be judging what happened 8.5 years ago. I view my role here as basically making a decision on a governor's appointment to the executive branch. And when I look at Mr. Willis's record, I look at a record of 40 years of service to this state and to this nation. And I always go back to one of the basic rules that I think most people should live their lives by, to be treated, to treat others as they would like to be treated. And I think in total, in the balance of Mr. Willis's career and his contribution to this state and to this nation, I think he'd be an excellent replacement for the retiring director.
Thank you. Other comments? I wanted to say to Ms. Edwards, thank you for having the courage to come before us to tell us your story. What happened to you was wrong. I think if it takes a lot of courage to speak out, and some of us in our lives haven't always had the courage to speak out, so I appreciate you doing that. That aside, I'm with Senator Devlin in terms of the big picture and ready to move forward on this appointment. So I just wanted to say thank you. Anything further?
No.
Okay. Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Senator Devlin?
Yes.
Senator Fisher?
He's excused.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
And Chair Brown?
Brown votes aye. The motion passes. Next appointment, public hearing and work session on the Oregon Investment Council. Mr. Gardner, would you please come forward? Good morning.
Co-chairs Brown and Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Mark Gardner. I'm a business person, a finance professional, and an entrepreneur and investor from Portland. Been involved in a number of Oregon businesses over the last 25 years, and involved in over $6 billion of economic development projects in Oregon. I've had the honor of serving on the Investment Council since October of 1999, and if confirmed for reappointment, would continue to bring the perspective of an economist and an economic development professional to the council. And an activist on corporate governance, which I have been on the council. There are always turbulent times in the markets, and certainly the last 3 to 5 years have been. And the council has, I think, weathered the storm well, as evidenced by the reports that as of the June 30th of this last year, this fiscal year, the Oregon Investment Council and the PERS Fund was in the top 5% of public funds over $10 billion. I'd be happy to answer questions.
No, Chair.
Senator Burdick.
Could you elaborate on that report of how the funds did? Who did the report and who was being compared? And
there are, I couldn't tell you, Senator, Co-Chair Senator Burdick. The report was given to me by the chief investment officer, and I'm not sure which of the national services it was that did the report, but they compare peer groups of public funds with $10 billion or more of assets and compare how they performed over the last year. So that's what the report was.
And so to follow up, Madam Chair, so we were in the top 5% nationally?
Yes.
So that is not, I mean, we could still, the fund still lost money like all the other funds did.
Actually, in that period, Senator, we did not. So far this year, we've had positive returns. We've had, obviously, a couple of years where there were negative returns, but in the last year, we've come back quite a bit.
Okay, thank you. And $10 billion, I mean, that's a... I mean, are there a lot of funds in that category?
Just guessing, I think it's in the range of 30 funds, Senator.
Pretty impressive. Thank you.
Yeah. You just gave us that background. But, you know, Oregon is one of the most depressed states. Can you describe, you know, how you're going to manage the funds or what your role in managing the funds and how you're going to move us forward?
Yes, co-chairs and Senator Beyer. The role of the council is to provide guidance overall for the fund, which involves obviously general policy, but specifically the asset allocation among the different asset classes and sub-asset classes. And then we also participate in the selection of money managers. It varies quite a bit depending on the asset class, how deeply the council gets into that, but we are involved with the selection of all the money managers. And in setting the policy, one of the things that I have been an activist about on the council and would continue to be is in pushing for corporate governance reforms that ensure that the funds that are invested are managed for the benefit of the shareholders, in our case, that's the members of PERS, so that rather than for the benefit of management, as I think everybody knows, over the last few years there have been a series of examples where that wasn't the case, and we have more recently been pushing for reforms. And for example, I pushed that we take control of having the proxies that previously had been voted by our money managers, voted by a professional service that is a shareholder-driven service. And in this last round of proxy voting, we did actually, in a number of cases, vote with the professionals against management in the interest of the shareholders. So we continue to do that. I think we do have opportunities to look at, and under the legislation that was passed in the last session, promote prudent investments in Oregon companies. And I think there are opportunities to do that. It always has to be done from the context and the perspective of a prudent investment. But I'm looking forward to implementing legislation that would allow us to do that.
Senator
Beyer. Yeah. Could you tell us what led you to leave the city of Portland and start working for the Portland Financial Management Company?
Senator Beyer, I left the city of Portland in 1985. And actually went to work for a company called Government Finance Associates. And the reason I left the city of Portland was because I had been through 8 budget cycles wanted to explore new opportunities in the private sector. And I'd worked for 4 mayors and really was ready to get out and do something else.
Okay. You were a member of the Portland Family Entertainment Group, is that correct?
Yes, sir, I was.
Could you tell us about some of the investments of that group?
Well, Portland Family Entertainment was formed to redevelop Civic Stadium into PG Park, which we did very successfully, and then also to operate the stadium and the baseball teams, which wasn't so successful. I was involved in forming that group and was a general partner of the group. And, in retrospect, the business was launched into a bad market. Obviously, it came on right at the deepest of the recession. It didn't achieve its sales objectives and, therefore, was not a financial success. It's one of a number of businesses I've been involved with. Fortunately, most of them have been a lot more successful than that one. I'm proud of what we accomplished with the redevelopment project, and I think that ultimately there will be a business there that will make money, but it won't be. I won't make any money on it.
Okay. What about the competitive wage issue with the PG Park and the city, and how that kind of all came out?
Well, the city adopted a policy that they would pay for companies with which they contracted, or they would require companies they contract with to pay what they called a fair wage. And they adopted a policy that in the process they would pay a certain portion of that to get it to that level. But it was totally driven by the city, and we were kind of on the receiving end of that.
So you had to pay employees at a certain wage, and the city subsidized you to get to that wage, is that correct?
No, the city paid the wages. They didn't subsidize the company. They paid the wages. They paid the difference between what they would have been and what the city's policy was to pay, which they effectively have also done with other contractors, janitorial contractors and things like that. It's a policy that was adopted to a whole bunch of contracts, not just at PG Park.
Okay.
Senator Atkinson.
Were you responsible for, didn't Lancer get an infusion of cash this year?
Lancer did get an infusion of cash. I was not involved with that. I have been involved in other projects with Lancer. We were partners with Lancer. One of the companies I've been involved with, Avrotech, was a partner with Lancer on a number of NASA contracts, which led to the development of the glass cockpits that are in the Lancer airplanes.
But your Clancy Gardner Pierce wasn't
one? No, we weren't involved with financing Lancer. No.
Have you been involved with attracting angels to Oregon companies?
Yes, I have, sir.
Can you give us some examples?
Yes, sir, I can. I'm an investor and was the outside board member of Morgan Connector, which is a startup in Portland in the electronics business. I'm also now the CEO of a company called Octavian Scientific, which is a semiconductor test startup, and we have angel investors. We're also in the process of negotiating with a series of venture capital firms as potential investors in that company.
Do you think the capital market in Oregon is healthy or sick?
Senator, that's a great question. Whenever I have a meeting now with the venture capitalists, the first question that I ask is, how many deals have you actually done in the last year? Because in most cases, the answer is very few. I think that's an indicator that the market is not healthy. That's why for the last couple of years, much of the early stage investment in startup companies has been by angels rather than VCs. Smaller non-institutional investors are a big part of what's funding companies right now.
So the fact that it's sick right now and our economy's upside down, are you going to make more conservative choices with the state's money on this board, or are you going to make more risky choices?
Well, Senator, I think you can make prudent choices and invest in startup companies with a portfolio like the Oregon Investment Council's portfolio. With a large portfolio like that that needs to be diversified, there is a segment of the portfolio that's in alternative equities, and a small portion of that is in venture capital right now. And I think that compared to most of our peers, that's a smaller portion than it has been. Now, for a period there, being out of venture capital was not good. More recently, in the last 2 years prior to this year, it was good to be out of venture capital. But I think the consensus opinion is that there is going to be an opportunity to be in venture capital early stage companies. But you have to accept if you're in that asset class, there are going to be some that fail. And you apply all the prudent analysis to it that you can. The reason that their returns are higher in venture capital is because the risks are higher. A portfolio of the size and diversity of the PERS fund generally would have an element of alternative equity and venture capital in order to try to achieve a higher return while keeping the overall portfolio risk budget, as they call it, within bounds. So what we try to do is to allocate the portfolio among the asset classes so that there is an appropriate balance between the potential for risk and the potential for return. It's still a very small portion of the portfolio that is in venture capital, and smaller than that, that's in early stage companies.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gardner, we've talked about this before. In terms of, I have a comment at first, Madam Chair. During those recent years when the state's funds fell in value overall, I've had a number of people in my district, and as people might imagine, there are a lot of people in my district with investments that have said to me and that have followed Oregon's results in terms of investments, that they would have been very pleased to have Oregon's money managers during that period of time, given the comparative losses that they had. But I did want to ask one question about something we talked about a few days ago, and that was why, even though the Investment Council isn't entirely just advisory in terms of setting, it does actually set direction, why you believe, and I believe, there should be a separation between the Investment Council and the actual money managers in terms of them making the actual day-to-day decisions of where to invest funds.
Co-Chair Senator Devlin, that's a very good question. There has been a history in the past where that process wasn't followed, and the results have not been good, where there was either the reality or the appearance that decisions were made for other than investment reasons. I think that the council and I personally believe that we're better served by having professional managers who make the direct investment decisions, because they do it every day, day in and day out, for their career, and that the council really serves the fund better by making the policy decisions, setting the criteria for selecting managers, and in fact, some cases selecting those managers, but not selecting the actual investments, because those are jobs that should be done by professionals who are at it all the time, as a general rule, and certainly where we have the history here, where we have some projects that where that's not been followed in the past that have come out badly.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Senator Ryan.
Is this a paid position?
No, sir.
Are you still on the Cruise Board?
Thank goodness, no, I'm not, sir.
Let me ask this question as a follow-up to Senator Byers. Is there anybody else on the Investment Council that has the background dealing with PERS issues that you have?
Co-Chair Brown, no, there is not.
Is there currently any, and I don't know if you can answer this question or not, who is the member who serves on the PERS board?
There is an interregnum now in the statute, Senator. There will not be a joint member until 2007. I think the thinking behind that was that there was a period of time here when that smaller PERS board was going to be getting on its feet. The PERS executive director serves as an ex officio member of the Investment Council, and is, you know, I'm assuming that the acting PERS director will be in that role at our next meeting.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I'm just looking at the cover. It says that under statutory qualifications that one member must be a member of the PERS board.
Ms. Goss-Duran, do you want to come up and talk about, address that issue, please?
I'm Nancy Goss-Duran from Executive Appointments, and in this last legislative session, the bill that took care of all the little adjustments that had to be made to the PERS legislation stipulated that this crossover position would be postponed until 2007 because the PERS board members did not have the experience, expertise, or time, quite frankly, to serve in that role. And so it was postponed so that they could get up to speed and then be appropriate members to cross over at that time. And I thought I had that written down, which...
Which bill number was that?
That's what I'm looking for right now. I thought I had written
2031.
I remember the fix-up bill, but I
2117, I believe. Is that? No, that's an old one. That was the one that changed it. I'm sorry.
I think it might have been 2031.
That's it, 2031.
It was the omnibus.
That's what Richard's saying. Senator Devlin is saying.
And I gave that information, I believe, to Marjorie Taylor early on, but I think probably in her rush to go someplace fun.
Senator
Chair, just for my education, because this is all kind of complicated stuff, when it does go into effect and you have the crossover member in 2007, does it specify that it has to be a PERS board member coming over to the investment council, or could it be the opposite?
Senator Burdick, it does specify a PERS board member, and in fact it specifies it has to be one of the three business members.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Gardner? Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a... How much do you need? 5.
Yeah, I guess it's 10:30 at least.
5-minute recess. Be back here at 10:30. Thank you.
Thank you.
Investment Council, we are doing some research, and for the time being, we're going to hold that the appointment of Mark Gardner to the Investment Council. It's my understanding he is serving currently on the Investment Council and will continue to serve. With that, we'll close that work session. Senator Beyer, I'm going to open a work session on appointments to the Appraiser Certification Licensure Board, Apprenticeship and Training Council, Aviation Board, Boiler Rules, Board Code Structure Board, Children and Families, Construction Contractors Board, Oregon and Community Development Commission, Government Standards and Practices Commission, Health Services Commission, Marine Board, Plumbing Board, Public Employees Benefit Board, State Fair Commission, Sustainability Board, Veterinary Medical Examining Board, Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, Watershed Enhancement Board, and the Commission for Women. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move.
Does it matter if they're appointments or reappointments?
I'm just going to do it.
Okay.
If somebody won't hear.
Then you waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation.
I move to waive the appearance and recommend the confirmation en bloc of the appointments of Clifford Hout to the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board, Kenneth Fry, John Howard, Catherine Matamore to Apprenticeship Training Council, Stephen Beckman to the State Aviation Board, John Endicott and John Pyle to the Board of Boiler Rules, Jim Schwager to the Building Code Structure Board, Joanne Mixis, Molly Rogers, John Yunker to the State Commission on Children and Families, Chuck Crump to the Construction Contractors Board, Nancy Tate to the Economic and Community Development Commission, John Kopetsky, Carolyn Walker to the Government Standards and Practice Commission, Daniel Magnum, Daniel Williams to the Health Services Commission, Trey Karskadin, and Deborah McQueen to the State Marine Board, Mary Leverett to the State Plumbing Board, Rocky King, Diane Lovell to the Public Employees Benefit Board, Peter McCaig to the State Fair Commission, J. Ned Dempsey to the Sustainability Board, Dolores Galindo, Rocky Liskey, Chris Ottman Brandt to the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, Rob Wagner to the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, Jack Shipley to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and finally Diane
Heinz and Susan Miller to the Women's Commission.
I'm not going to repeat them all. Don't worry. Senator Beyer has moved that we approve the previous appointments and recommend the confirmation and waive the appearances en bloc of the appointments just mentioned. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
For the record, Senator Beyer mispronounced Mr. Beckham's name, and I'd like to clear up the record.
It is Steve Beckham.
What did I say?
Beckman. It's okay.
Nobody wants the wrong guy on the committee.
Okay. Anything else? Any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Yes.
Let me have that one.
Senator Beyer?
Hi.
Chair Brown?
Aye. Hang on just a minute. Anybody else? No. Motion passes, and Senator Devlin is the newest member of his committee. You're going to carry the aforementioned appointments. I had Senator Burdick.
Describe each one of them in detail. Right?
Yes, you will. And at which point we will kill you on the Senate floor, and it won't be a problem. Senator Burdick is carrying the Employment Appeals Board. Senator Atkinson is carrying the Lottery Commission. I'll carry the Oregon Health and Sciences Board and the Port of Portland. Senator Beyer, do you want to carry the Tourism Commission?
Sure.
And do you want to do the Veterans Affairs?
Sure.
Okay. Great. Okay. Anything further to come before the committee? I have been informed that our January committee hearing will be a doozy. We will have a number of appointments, so we will probably meet prior to the day of executive appointments if you all can get your vacation scheduled for the holidays squared away. So, any further business?
Madam Chair.
Senator Burry.
Did we have carriers for the...
Yes.
Battery? Okay.
We appointed them while you were out.
You just got one. Who did you get?
She got EAB.
Oh, you got Tony. That's right.
Tony and Mary Feldbrook.
Right. That's it?
Yes.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And we gave Senator Devlin as his sort of initiation to the Senate Rules Committee all of the in black appointments.
He'll do a fabulous job.
I know he will.
That's from appraiser certification and down. Right?
Yes. With that, we're closed.
Yeah, the...